As long as we're either in need of advice or for as long as we could possibly benefit from advice, we're mistaken.
Pointers?
Hmm?
Pointers? I'm thinking about what we do here. I'm not hearing much advice normally, but there's discussion of something. Clearly it resonates or I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. Well, no matter what conclusion you reach about anything at all, that's what you think.
Don't attribute it to you, is that what you're saying?
Well, we are incestuously narcissistic.
Oh, yeah.
With ourselves. Everything we think and feel and the advice that we've been given or the advice we'd like to give, the advice we'd like to hear. Commentary, commentary, commentary. You know, pithy spiritualisms, angel readings. You name it. Because we're all about us.
Of course.
Yeah. So if there were a collapse, you could say, of habitual self-interest, then you wouldn't seek advice, need or receive advice. You're less likely to give advice. Nirvana is this that is, with no sign of incestuous narcissism. You're not interested in, let's say, reciting or convincing yourself of the experience you think you're having. And you're sure less interested in convincing anybody else about the experience that you might think you're having. So there's a, can we say a lapse of association with the sensual. Hi. That's nirvana. A lapse of association with the sensual. And if there were such a thing as present experience, that would be the let's say the place to look. Present experience is the both the demonstration of the lapse of association with the sensual, the ongoing. Demonstrative invitation and expression to be the hallucination of yourself.
Is it me or does the downstairs smell like a barn?
Well, those infants, you know, I think when they turn off the baby monitor, they start passing around the rye.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'd like to go to a 12-step meeting with 6-year-olds. It would be a hoot. So if you, let's say you think you have a future where feeling a certain way about it would be somehow advantageous. Well, that's misery. Let's say you have a past where you have the gift of a million if onlys. Because whatever might have occurred in the past and or the way that you felt about it then or have felt about it since is just an endless stream of if-onlys. And that's misery too. And even misery, is not so bad. Really. Depending on, the nature of the misery. Like if you were an LGBTQ kind of person in one of those, nations that hate you, that can't feel so good. And if you're rounded up and assassinated, well, that can't feel so good either.
Well, like those gay rights activists with like the Soviet flag and hammer and sickle, it's like, stop around all you people and put you in camp or just killed you outright. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it. So, we're talking in, what would you call it? Somewhat indulgent, lofty tones. Hi. Because we, because we can. If we were under siege politically, institutionally, biologically, climatologically, if we were under siege and our biologic homeostasis was at risk, it would be it'll be more challenging to have a lofty conversation about the nature of realization.
Even when you're like really sick or something, it feels that way.
Yeah, sure.
But there does seem to be a kind of like, it's like a, this isn't about living. If this isn't about living, this is not about living.
Yeah.
That's a very different thing that creeps in.
Absolutely.
What do you mean if you're not worried about living?
It's just not about living a life at all. But yeah, I mean, you can start with, it's not about like whether you live or die or how healthy, it's just not about living a life at all.
Yeah.
It's a completely different.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's a kind of permission to have this lofty conversation. Because it's not really about, one's politics or point of view or safety.
How things are, safety, how things are going, whether you're going to live or die or not.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're beseeching.
I mean, it's really crazy to be like, whether I live or die is irrelevant. Because it's an imaginary.
It's the irrelevant sangha. Everyone who comes is irrelevant. What's spoken about is irrelevant. Still, there's room for snacks.
Yeah, and you'll still do whatever it takes to live, maybe.
No question.
Have anything to do with
that. That's right.
Yeah, it's only irrelevant after you're dead. But it's like, all
right. Yeah, then it's really irrelevant.
I get the viewpoint. But then, like, sometimes if I actually, I forget how I get to this place, but if I actually think about my death, I'm like, no, don't die, hold on. It's like something in me, really wants to, hold on, deep inside.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah. whatever the bylaw, I don't know what it is, but it seems to, it doesn't want to have anything go to shit.
If we are beseeching, if we're beseeching something, you know, parent, guru, teacher, spouse, employer, ascended masters, angels, you know, deceased pets. If we're beseeching anything at all, it's too late. We're deluded. We're sufficiently deluded with self that it'd be nice if we could catch a break, and if someone other than ourselves could offer us that break.
Yeah. Or at least just tell me something to make me feel better.
That's part of it. Right. That's right. So nirvana is the lapse of association with sensuality. And that sensuality is not just physical or biological sensuality, it's the sensuality of consciousness and the stories that are told about the epic of myself. And here, whatever here might be, don't hold me to it, is that very nirvana. This is the lapse of self-infatuation, of incestuous narcissism. I mean, even if there's physical sensation, and let's say there is, if you're not supplying the narrative, the thought bubbles, if you're not writing the comic book narrative that associates with whatever present experience might be, then you could say it's kind of lighthearted. Even if there's pain. The habit of mind is to turn to incestuous and narcissistic narrative to paint a portrait of one's so-called condition, which includes anything that you think or feel about the imagination of the past, anything that you think or feel about what you might consider the present, and of course anything that you think or feel about the apparitional projection of the future. Present experience turns out to be a ecstatic beatitude. When or as you drop the narrative.
Did you guys talk about the angel reading already?
No, we hadn't gotten there yet.
What? Oh, when you need money, you need money, you know? I guess.
You've been given angel readings again.
You're getting them.
Might as well blow a smoke up someone's ass for it.
I got to write her back.
I was like driving, so I couldn't read it, but all I saw was like some kind of giant green and blue angel. I'm like, man, I really got to read this, but I was died like while reading it.
Yeah, it wasn't meant to kill anyone.
Yeah. Shouldn't be driving and reading this email at the same time.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty funny.
Oh, God.
What was the other things he does now? Angel readings? And
healings. Painting. Music. She's a new age.
Hooker.
She's a new age hooker, yeah.
Pretty much.
Oh, man.
Which is very funny because it's such a juxtaposition from her, let's say, backhanded rigor of her non-dual expositions, which dismiss everything as imagination in a kind of, an endearing manner.
I think you have even like sort of like criticized her for being like too much like that.
Yeah, yeah, because she can really lean on it. Yeah,
she took what she said to heart. She's trying to balance it out a little bit.
I think she's trying to balance it out by going with angel readings.
Most likely, she needs money.
She needs money.
With the hooker thing, I think that's the most accurate.
You can't make a living.
Like, what do you want me to do? Give me some money.
You can't make a living telling people they don't exist.
Yeah,
they're not going to
angel readings.
They're not
going to
cough it up.
Yeah, cough it right up.
Angel readings is fine.
It almost seems to like degrade her to like buy one of those.
Yeah. Yes. I know.
Oh, man.
Yes.
I mean, that was like, your intention to purchase one, right? Like,
it's kind of like getting.
Don't ask me. It showed up in my lap. I just hit click. I was like, wow. I'm going to write her back and saying, hey, that was really nice, but here's $20 and tell me the fucking truth. About myself.
How much did the angel reading cost?
$10 British pounds, so $13 and change. Oh. Yeah.
You bought an angel reading?
I did, from an enlightened woman.
And what did she say?
She told me about a big blue-green angel and rusty tools and naked men and fields of barley. That was the part I really liked. They weren't naked.
Wow. Did she accuse you of being like, maybe a little gay with blue green angels?
I don't know. I was so excited when I got it. Yeah. I was so excited when I got it. I thought, oh, man, she's going to get right into my shit here. It's going to be so embarrassing. I won't be able to share it with anyone. And it turned out to be vapid.
Yeah. Kind of, it's like reading your horoscope in the
I thought she was going to get into all my like addiction issues and, all the times I've been arrested and shit and... What list are you? What list do you end up on? Angie's list?
Worst. Megan's list?
Yeah, not Angie's list.
The pedophile list? Would you be referring to? It's a different list.
Shit.
Anyway, it was a hoot.
I had a numerology thing from Marcia from Delaware, and she nailed me. She
fucking
nailed me.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It was scary how right on it was. And I was like, did I tell you about this, this, and this? She's like, no, I didn't know anything. Like, I didn't like it.
Yeah, no, you don't like it when people, find stuff out about you that you haven't voluntarily shared with them.
Correct.
Yeah.
Have you met Elamay before, interacted with her before?
Very briefly, during a talk. I think it was a live talk, and I wasn't on video. I just, wrote a few things, and she just, shredded me.
Ooh.
It was great.
How long ago was this?
Less than a year. I mean, I was just being kind of, fond of her in a way, trying to be encouraging or something. And man, she just pulled my head off. And I would think I was logged in under Peter Brown's Radiant Presence, Gmail or something. I hadn't intended to be, but I was kind of logged in under Peter's, Radiant Presence thing. And she was making fun of that. She was making fun of everything. It was great. Yeah.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen. Huh?
Oh, boy, now she's doing angel readings in the gutter.
Yeah.
There you go. Just be careful with how enlightened you feel. Be measured in your enlightenment so you can still make a living without resorting to angel readings.
Just keep a job, Jesus.
Yeah, don't quit your day job.
Yeah, don't quit your day job, yeah.
That's been my approach. Of course, it's getting a little hairy.
Sure. I mean, otherwise you end up like, you know, a non-dual prostitute, regardless of gender.
Non-dual prostitute.
You know, trying to make everyone happy and tell them interesting shit about themselves and your life and your fucking teacher and your enlightenment experiences and what they should or shouldn't do. And you're like, you know, fuck. Morphine would be much better than that.
Did you get any more correspondence from Roger?
No. No, I didn't.
It didn't seem that bad. I don't know.
No,
he sort of like made a point. He said, like, basically, what's the end result of my path? The same thing you're saying, so what the F?
Yeah.
He made a big plus out of it, but...
Well, I read, you know, I like to read shit into shit just for fun.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was kind of like the back of his hand. But that's the way they are. I mean, Wayne is that way. You know, it seems like a big fucking love fest when you're on retreat, you know, and you've spent all the money. But it's very impersonal. It's kind of like a show.
If you haven't spent the money.
That's right. If you haven't spent the money. Yeah. You're not going to get a lick. You're not going to get a lick if you haven't spent the money.
Not going to get a lick.
Yeah, you just get like a little pat on the back and like, oh, come on, talk and we'll get more into it, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that's right. It's all come on.
I can't do anything here.
Yeah.
That's this Friday, right? That's tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Oh, shit. Tomorrow. Jesus Christ.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Fun comes up really fast.
I thought today was Friday earlier. I mean, it just seemed like Friday, but not even a week.
Turned out it's not.
Yeah.
It's Thursday.
That's in Bethlehem?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. We were talking about having dinner beforehand at the Best Western.
Up there?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, let me know if you go. I'll try to meet you guys there.
There's a coffee house within walking distance, I think, too, for a cup of coffee beforehand. I was trying to find someplace other than a Best Western restaurant.
We could sit at Roger and Jimmy's table.
I guess it's not out of your way to come up to Regalsville, huh? Anyway, we could talk about it.
Yeah. All right. Good. Okay, so, let's see. We covered the angel reading.
You watched a short clip from Peterson?
I did.
Right when this, just the part I linked, right? At 41 minutes?
I didn't like it.
He like right at 41 minutes. He just spoke like 30 seconds about like the absolute, but it was like from like a traditional Advaita side. Except it lined up literally perfectly. I thought it was a nice description. This is probably
I listened to a thing where he was talking about being human. Was that it? Did it include? About being human?
I mean, it was like a 40-minute talk.
Yeah.
Linked right to a specific time, and everyone just restarted it, huh?
No, I, like, came in here because I realized it was, like, 41 minutes into it or something.
He said, like, there's a Jewish parable.
Yeah, the Jewish parable started there.
It says, like, God is, or human is God and human.
Yeah.
And then, like, then he was like, and this is what being is, and then that God is the absolute, and then, like, went and laid all the qualities of it, and then, like, talked about how we interact. Yeah. You know, limitless, formless, and then, like, how being, like, interacts with... I thought, you know, no one else thought that was an interesting description.
It was great.
You guys are losers.
Yeah, we're bad.
Well, it's kind of like in your own, you know, like, and you might have been listening and been in some really enthralled thing, and then he just said one thing, but if you jump in the middle, like, his accent threw me off, and he just had, like, a weird mannerism that didn't catch me. I don't know.
Yeah, he's got the Kermit the Frog voice, I know.
I think that was from 2009.
Yeah, it was pretty old. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
No, I don't know. I see.
Before Enlightenment was in vogue.
Yeah. So I don't even think he ever even invoked it in any way. I just thought, wow, no. Like, that was spot on. Like,
good, yeah.
I thought you wrote that for.
Well, that's very kind. I don't think so.
Suzanne, she emailed me. I think she liked it. Good enough for me.
There you go. You got one.
You got one.
That's all you need. One person for one high five. Let it rest. Yeah. So we covered the angel reading, Peterson's remarks on non-duality, and self-realization.
We're all losers.
Wrap it up.
Except Ryan, he's not a loser. Everyone else is losers.
It's good to have one non-loser in the group. It's something to aspire to.
Yeah. He's young enough to still have a chance. Leave while you can.
Yeah. Don't walk, but run. Run from here.
You told me that. I didn't take it seriously. I should have.
Uh-huh. Well, it's my obligation to mention it. I can't promise how you take it.
Yeah, unfortunately, if you have that kind of rebellious nature where you're like, did you just dare me?
Exactly.
Now I have to be it.
Yeah. So you see, the slightest anticipation of, call it joy, is you're too late. Yeah. Now, why does that happen? Why is there an anticipation for, you know, joy or realization or whatever you'd like to call it, right here in the midst of the actuality of it? See, it's strange. We have to somehow figure out, which of course is involuntary and impersonal, how present experience is missing something. Maybe missing a lot. I mean, missing a lot. It's missing a lot. And then I am inspired or triggered somehow to contemplate the nature of whatever I might call my life, past, present, future, failure to launch, all the ways I've been, you know, I have insulted others and have been insulted by them ad nauseum. And then that anticipation or craving for a different quality of experience occurs just magically, quite magically. And then I sign on to that perspective involuntarily. And that's it. That's all it takes. It's the simplest little nothing of nothing of nothing. Is the presumption that you will benefit through some kind of experience that's other than this one. So there's a, call it a streaming quality of refusal. Craving is basically refusal. Anticipation is a kind of refusal. Being on the lookout for symptoms that are more agreeable than the ones that may be presently appearing, that's a form of refusal. So that's what one might call, you know, ego or self. The streaming nature of refusal.
Seems, in my experience, just really like a habitual, addictive, you know, kind of streaming. It's like a streaming, habitual.
Uh-huh.
It's just like, just feels like any other addiction I've ever had.
Well, sure.
It's just like,
yeah.
You know, there's no break. In most addictions, it's very hard to get a break. You just need a little bit of space.
It's really the best joint I've ever smoked because it never goes out.
Yeah, you just need a little bit of space and you can't get it. You know, it's so hard to...
I'm always high on myself.
Yeah, you're always high on yourself. It's so hard to just find that little bit of...
yeah.
Put yourself down for a little bit.
That's right. That's right. And so even the disgruntlement that arises, you know, the injection that turns you into a seeker. One day you were just a miserable fuck and you were okay with that, but then you had to become a seeker. Things got much worse.
Well, I mean, even when you're a miserable fuck, you're just like, oh, I need to get this job or do this.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like
what
you're seeking, really.
That's right.
Yeah, you're running around hyped up on adrenaline and, you know, meshed in.
It's almost manageable to be kind of just a miserable fuck, wanting the shit that you think you need to get so that you'll be less of a miserable fuck.
Yeah, I guess it does shift up a little bit when you, like, when someone tells you what you're doing, you're like, what have I been doing for the past 20-some years?
Yeah. Yeah. Once you add the seeker equation to being a miserable fuck, it's like, whoa.
But then nobody at first really even tells you that, like, We're like, oh yeah, but this is what you need to see. Like nobody says like, nah, maybe you can just chill the F out. Like people are just like, oh yeah, this is it. Like,
yeah.
Well, yeah, you're getting advice from other addicts.
I just bought an angel reading. Oh, in hopes that it would help. I got like Michael, Archangel Michael, and Sananda, and Kuan Yin.
Do you think all the boys get blue green? I don't know.
Well, you know what? You should buy one, but use a masculine
Frankie.
Yeah, use Frankie Stroman, and see what happens.
She'll be like, you are so gay.
Man.
I know.
So there's self-reflection without really any self-reflection occurs, you could say. I lied. I was going to say self-reflection occurs without delay, but self-reflection is delay. So it's really hard to nail it down. If I am noticing some kind of irritability or absence or craving, whatever it is, right? That only arises through the reflex of interpretive self-reflection, because you have created a right conclusory response, maybe a very sincere one and very well considered and highly intelligent, but you have created a narrative having to do with your so-called present experience. And you're going to find, invariably, you're going to find something wrong with that narrative. Well, what's wrong with the narrative? You are. You're what's wrong. See, it's the very arising of the capacity of self-reflection that is the problem. Not what you find, but that you are banking on, self-reflection. That's the problem. You're the problem. And yet, you don't know how to get rid of yourself. So you want the relief of yourself to come pouring in through some other agency. Like an angel or, a loud tree frog. Or, the god of your making, the god of your creation, the god of your superstition. See, you're the problem. What is the problem? Self-reflection, self-consideration. And accompanied by any conclusion at all. Any conclusion at all. Any conclusion at all. That's the problem. Because now you've found something. Now you're oriented to the sense of yourself having found something, and you're miserable. Not because of anything else other than that very act. We will turn circumstances and events into the usual suspects. We'll blame everything and anything else as being why I feel the way I feel, why there's, insufficiency. But no, those are all after the fact. The primacy of one's irritability is the presence of oneself, is incestuous narcissism. And that's that. You're toast. Now, if we approach this curious dilemma through misdiagnosis or remedial intervention, it won't change it. It can't change it. Remedial intervention, regardless of how lofty the spiritual practice is or the purification is, or how many times you either say Hare Krishna or, put catenines on your, raw flesh, it's not going to help you. It can't. no intervention can assist you in the erasure of your incestuous narcissism. And that's, but trying, right? Hoping and trying that some kind of agency, whether your own or somebody else's, could possibly relieve you of the myth of yourself is why there are churches and steeples and cosmologies and
angels
and Petersons and angels and crusades and international orders of interbeing. And
is that
everything
a real thing?
That is, yeah. That is a real thing.
Sounds just like you think it is, huh?
Well, you take a few vows, you get a brown jacket, you eat slowly, you're good to go.
Form of the brownies.
It's a form of the brownies.
Adult brownies.
Yeah, adult brownies. Right.
Were you a brownie when you were younger?
I think for like a hot minute.
I can't picture
they threw
it.
Her out.
I can picture that.
I probably left.
She was a pot brownie.
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of like, wait, my mom told me this was going to be oh, you guys are going to make shit? I'm out of here. You guys are sober and you're going to make shit?
Yeah.
I'm leaving.
You see, even if even if you string out cryptic or casual remarks about, you know, yourself, your ego, your this, your that, those are, you know, they're entertaining because they're about me. You know, I love to hear even obnoxious things said about myself because it's still about me and I can get a good chuckle of just how fucked up I am, but it won't necessarily help. I mean, chuckles are good, you know, get as many as you can. There's no question about that. But unless you really call it lean in, but not lean at all, into the presently appearing apparitional hypnotic suggestion of one's incestuous narcissism, it's too good. It's too good. It's got you. It loves it. It loves it when you hate yourself. It loves it when you love yourself. It loves it when you're happy. It loves it when you're sad. It loves having always something to say about the imagination of your present condition. It's got you. And we presume, or we offer that, you know, that shameless liar our loyalty. We unrelentingly turn over it over and over again to the imaginary authority in our own head that pretends to tell us what's up. And then we find, you know, this some kind of psychic or existential disquietude. We're not sure why, but we'll end up blaming a million things for it. But none of those are the reason. If you place your blame on the wrong set of thieves, you can't wake up.
So this is about finding the right thing to blame.
Yeah, basically, self-realization is a game of finding the right culprit.
Should be easy, man. I'm good at that.
Yeah. Well, Kaiser Sose walked right out of there. Right?
It's a good movie.
Yeah. Yeah, Kaiser Sose was, you know, he was on the lineup. He walked right out of there. Yeah. If anything is anything, you're too late. If anything is anything, you have successfully comprised a world. So that's the habit of deceit. The habit of deceit insists over and over again, semi-consciously, if not unconsciously, that this is about something. That my my realization, my happiness, my existence is dependent upon. I am dependent upon. Yeah. Bless you.
We do seem to be dependent on a lot of things in this place. Oxygen.
Yeah. Sure.
Gravity.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, of course, you know, if what we're referring to as consciousness is accompanied by the accoutrement of biology or physicality, then yeah, then
a life lived,
which includes a life lived, of course, yeah. Then yeah, your entire being is a dependency, is a codependency relationship with forces that you obviously have no control over. And that could be a fun string to pull on, because that could render one realize just as easily as anything else can. Pull on the string of how many things we imagine ourselves to be dependent upon, and you might see that you can't find anything.
What, like take a look?
Okay.
It seems like I'm dependent on this oxygen. If it was gone, I'd be doing something. I could.
Yeah, you'd be writhing around on the floor. Or wherever.
Over all of you to try to get to the source of where I could get some.
Yeah, for sure.
I might end up top of you and get there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. If you're like, or if you're a James Bond villain and James Bond leaves you a can of oil in the desert,
yeah,
you drink it.
Is that from a new movie or something?
One of the. Okay. Couple back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What fun. Yikes.
This place is just a load of fun.
See, it's really, it's challenging to, let's say, consider the possibilities of whatever realization might pretend to be. Because we're always reflexively looking through the lens of body, through the lens of consciousness, through the lens of sensuality, through the lens of my mood and my sentiment and my stuff, and you know all the good works that I have performed that have not yet been, you know, rewarded on Earth.
But we have a person living on Earth who is interested in living for the most part.
Yes.
Some people are interested in
that. That's right. As long as you're creature-centric, then realization can only be an accoutrement, and you're fucked.
Everything is like an accoutrement, and you're fucked. I mean, everything is, because it's so fast and so changing and so nonsensical in that realm.
Uh-huh.
There is no sense to be made.
None.
In that realm.
Yeah.
Especially.
Nonsensical ambiguity. Good luck. Yeah. So, see, even the fondness that I might have for enviable spiritual experience that I'm sure Roger Castillo has, that envy, right, springs into being from nowhere at all. And the envy frames the myth of oneself. So what's missing is you're missing. What's missing from your experience is you're missing. If you were gone, you would no longer miss your being gone, you'd be fine. But as long as you're around, you incestuous narcissist, you, there's a problem. Yeah. Right. So the problem is a misunderstanding, right, of whatever you want to refer to this as. Call it presence. Who gives a fuck? Yeah. As soon as you interject the pride of self in the equation of being, there's something wrong. What's wrong is the presence of you. That's what's wrong. And then, failing to see that, which is common, we want amelioratives for the nagging problem, which is the presence of myself. But now the ameliorative are, they're second generation. They can't work because they're all superficial.
Where, like, you see it and then you're trying to get away from yourself, and that also is a dead end. It's
yep.
Like, oh, I'm just so tired of myself. I just want to get away.
Yeah.
Like, as if you can somehow, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like wanting to get out of consciousness altogether.
I would like to distance myself from myself.
Yeah.
But since I suffer from incestuous narcissism, I can't seem to create any space. Boy.
I'm so concerned with what I might be doing in the moment.
And even more concerned with how people perceive me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, whatever. It's just all wrapped up in.
Yeah. I'm like pigs.
As long as it's about me.
I'm like pigs in blankets. I'm all wrapped up.
Wrapped up in bacon.
We have to have a bacon party.
Turkey bacon today.
Oh, nice.
I had a bacon party today.
Phew, cosmic.
I really liked it.
Yeah, I didn't notice that there was no bacon party in my angel reading. And I was a little disappointed. All of your problems will go away if you would only have a bacon party. Your friend, Archangel Michael.
Woo-hoo! I know, you probably been more excited too, right?
I would be legit shit. Can you imagine if that's what she sent you? That'd be like $10-$13 well spent.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for a bacon party? Yeah. Nailed it once again.
Did you read my mind?
Yeah. God, you're reading my mind from across the ocean. Oh boy.
Imagine you just sent back like, you are an asshole.
Yeah.
I was hoping that's what would come. Yeah. I know you. You are an asshole. Don't ever buy an angel reading again, and I'm keeping the $10. What? That would have been like, yes. Right on the money.
Yes, I had some bacon nailed to your house.
Yeah. 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 If you have a consideration of yourself or your stuff or your, you know, your past, and that is, it's fabricated. You fabricate the hallucination and the imagination of prior experience.
Seems like it's based on something.
It sure can.
It can seem like anything. I mean, this. Seeing how good you are, this is at doing that is like, and you don't, yeah, you like, it's after the fact, you're like, It's like talking to a really good, you know, con artist, and you like ask them something, but you never get a straight answer, and then you're walking away, and you're like,
that's you, that's right.
Wait a minute. It's in my wallet.
I never got any information on them that I was interested in getting, you know, they just ran circles all around me, and then spit me out.
That's us, right? That's our own mind.
Yeah.
The con artist of our own mind. Yeah. Steals everything we have, and never answers any question we've asked.
You're like, wait.
Then you die. And then you fucking die. You're like, I think I've been conned. It's a little late.
Yeah.
For that insight.
You can write your wife a note about it. Roger
Dean.
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute.
Hey, wait a minute. I've been conned.
That's useful.
Yeah. Glad you got there. Might have been more fun a couple
of
years. Yeah. 99, exactly. 99. Great insight, 99. See, even the impulse to make sense of anything, make sense of yourself, make sense of the way you feel, make sense of your life, your stuff, your moods, your presumptions and projections, the justification for yourself, the things you hide, the things you're proud to share, you know, that whole ball of hoopla. It's absurd.
It's exhausting.
It for sure is exhausting. So it turns out that when we, you could say, turn our attention to ourselves, you know, for a pat on the back or a good, you know, a good criticism, a really well-deserved criticism, that's the hallucination of self. And then the way we feel about the subliminal critiques that we're giving ourselves all the time is more fuel for, you know, the sense of individuation.
Yeah, watching that is really interesting. I mean, just like one phone call or something can shift the entirety of my world. It's like,
yeah,
there was complete and total lack, and then I had a phone call, and now there's abundance, and then something else. You know what I mean? It's just like, whoa, that is.
Yeah.
It can be really quick. How?
Yeah.
And one little thing can like shift. And then it's very obvious that that is, it's not real. You know, it can't be, not that there's something that's real versus not real, but it's just an orientation, you know, it's just a total fabricated.
Yes, yes. Orientation. That's right.
That you made up.
Yeah, you made it up, this made it up, and, you know, named you in the suit.
Yeah, if that has nothing to do with you, then it's just a welcome inquiry, ingress into how this operates.
Yeah.
So you're just watching, you're like, well, this, you know, and that's the difference. It's not about you living a life. It's like just a welcoming kind of, not that it's like you're welcoming in a behavioral way, but.
Right.
You're interested in a totally different kind of informational inquiry.
Without the presence of mind creating the hallucination of time, which compromises intimacy, because it creates a false sense of self. So a false sense of self has what capacity to be intimate? Well, none. Because it's just running on fumes. The collapse of what we're referring to as mind, the collapse of narrative, is intimacy. Now, it could be felt as intimacy between, namely between your perceptive field and, let's say, you know, the musical sound of a bird, right? Or anything.
Or so, frogs.
Yeah, right. Or very loud frogs mating. Yes. So, but there's no intimacy between. The collapse of narrative is just right.
Yeah, that's the kind of welcoming. It's not a it's not through the filter of like
right.
Oh, I embrace you like it's some new age.
Right.
I'm just welcoming to everything.
Ew. It sounds like Spears.
It's
in his, you know,
very different
new age calamities. Yeah. The lapse of craving is intimacy. The lapse of craving is the lapse of anticipation, the lapse of self. See, the reflex is that, oh, I should do this, therefore. I will do this, therefore. I will cultivate this, therefore. You see, and so it brings the loop back on the...
It's like a big mouse just ran.
Big mouse?
Ran
up the curtain. He lives in the basket up there. It's good for little kids to be...
He ran up the curtain under the shelves.
He's on top. Sorry. I'm just like surprised to see him scale the curtain. Good sex.
Climbing around the dishes.
More fleas, yeah. Dynamic. Oh, good.
Yeah. Fine. Wasn't me. Wasn't you. Wasn't the mouse.
It's a non-dual mouse. He came for the talk.
Yeah, he's probably lying by now. He's been here longer than anybody else.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that mouse is like chilling. It's like is already. It's already is. Who invited you? Is already is. Who invited you?
Comes uninvited.
Yeah.
Every morning.
Sure.
Here she is.
Yeah.
Put together the world. Where am I? What's going on? What do I do next?
Yes, right?
It's my day.
Yep. See, the engine of self-reflection. The engine of narrative.
Flows in.
Yeah.
Where am I? Who am I?
Yeah.
What am I going to do today? What's up?
And there's no admonition or suggestion that you know, should stop or you should do something about it or wouldn't it be great if that weren't occurring? None of that. It's like perfectly swell. So there's no refusal of the, you know, the chiming of oneself or the chiming of the imagination of oneself. There's no refusal. It's like, you know. Somehow we can say, after you know, a little bit of time, a little bit of repeated curiosity, call it repeated curiosity, the reflex to associate self with the movement of narrative relaxes. And so the habit to go to narrative for vetting and validation relaxes.
Narrative doesn't stop.
It can and will. Not necessarily permanently, because there's no permanently. But the the volume, inertia, seriousness, habit, energy, addictive, right? To go to narrative for validation can relax. So much so that presence takes the place of the reflex to go to narrative. And therefore the craving, the kind of habitual craving in anticipation of framing so-called one's experience through narrative lapses and collapses.
It's just like if you have an addiction to sugar and then you stop eating it for a while, you just kind of eventually it sort of, not forget about it necessarily, but it just kind of keeps moving more to the background. You know what I mean? You don't think about it as much and you just kind of, it becomes a
habits.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Roger mentioned, you know, these words in his little thing. One being, you know, call it awakening, whatever the fuck that refers to, and then stabilization, right? Because you can have cathartic experience, you can have conscious discontinuity, and there's no law that says you can't refer to that as awake. There's no law that says you should refer to it as awake. It doesn't really matter. Because even, I mean, awake is a, right, it's a poster, right? So is stabilization. I mean, they don't really mean anything. But there's an implication that awake could suggest lapse of personal continuity, and that stabilization is, that's where you chill. Even in the midst of, you know, the day and the craft of being with yourself, or the craft of being with other people, of getting to work on time, making sure you're business casual.
Dealing with your new neighbors.
That's right. Right here, were there any? This is the realization you've been waiting for, if you've been waiting for one. If you haven't been, you're lucky. If you have been, you're lucky. Here it is. You're lucky no matter which way you go.
Win-win.
It's win-win. You're in luck.
You're the good news.
Yeah, you're in luck. Yeah. But if it's just didactic, then, you know, it's either a pleasant didactic or it's annoying as all fuck out, right? So if there's an objective, the objective is to stumble into a firsthand, whatever that means, quality of presence, which is not the product of or tainted by some kind of didactic, spiritual or otherwise. This so-called moment is the demonstration of the absence of yourself. It really is. What else could it be? And, curiously enough, it can also appear to be the nagging, dogged, never-to-let-go presence of the hallucination of yourself. Go figure. It seems like any other, you know, conversation that doesn't just keep leaning into, right, the present demonstration of nirvana is just going to spin, right, narrative. And that's all hypothetical. It's all conjecture. What happened to me? What hasn't happened to me? What I hope will happen to me? What if I do this? Then what will be the outcome? If this happens, how will I respond? What will I do about all of my codependency and everybody else's codependency, which is driving me insane? You like that, you know.
The world, politics, blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
Go on.
That's right. 7 years to live or more or less. That's right. Right.
How should I live my life in case there might be a chance?
That's right.
Or not.
Yeah. There can't be any, let's just say, practical or impractical freedom in the midst of a narrative that has to do with your ongoing existence.
You're just immediately tied in fucking shitload of knots. You're like, I'm just...
Yeah, that's right. It's like you're sleeping with Gordian. Mm-hmm. Gordian knot.
Oh.
That was a nerdy reference, man. Holy shit.
I got some nerdy references.
Are you channeling Peter?
If only.
If only.
I know I already asked you this a while ago, but did you ever watch True Detective?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You know Russ Cole, right? Yeah. McConaughey?
Yeah, his character.
Yeah. He's a good character, right?
Awesome. Yeah. Well, his unraveling of that mysterious underworld is a nice metaphor for realization. you're pacing me. You got me. Busted. Yeah. Because you are running a secret society of one in your own mind, and you are every kind of offender. I mean, in that was a primarily, a serial sex offender of minors, et cetera, et cetera. So we don't have to accuse everybody of that in this room, not everyone. but regardless of the secret society that you're running,
That was like Natalie said. When she was little, thinking about, what if I created all of this?
Yeah, right.
Where did that come from?
I know. Like, right, magical insight. Yeah. The avid, seeker wants to know, for good reason, what are my chances of enlightenment? And if they're better than zero, even just a little bit better than zero, when?
How do I increase them? How do I up the
That's right.
probability?
That's right.
What do I do?
Same idea, sure. What are my chances when? What do I have? Who do I have to fuck around here?
To get a glass of water. Remember that? Too many other things. God, that was
funny. So the myth itself just, pours forth. I mean, it's really... it's magical, it's generous, it loves you to death, actually. The myth of oneself. The instantaneous capacity to create a world that you dwell in. And, if you take up the candle of seeking, then, you want to find out what to do about yourself through whatever lens it is you've been attracted to. The Book of Urantia, the Order of Interbeing, the local Rosicrucians. Your friends at Pebble Hill.
A-A-N-A.
The Night Sky Sangha.
The Night Sky Sangha, probably the worst place to get any kind of meaningful information.
Still try.
You can still try.
We're still hoping.
They have curtain mouse. Gravity-defying mice. The reflex of what will become of me next is somewhat profound. And it's that reflex, which of course is just a symptom of something, more subtle and stranger than that, of course. But at least it narrates in one respect as what's going to happen to me next. What will become of me next? 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 It's an insatiable anticipation. And that reflex, that craving, that, you know, self-reflection and pursuit of validation, experiential validation, existential validation is samsara. What would it feel like if the refrain of oneself stopped singing? Sometimes we can be all too clever and, you know, characterize secular or spiritual insights through clever vernacular. It's like we always want to have the last say. So intimacy isn't enough. Intimacy is not enough for us. I have to make a pithy comment. I have to look spiritually adept in the eyes of my peers. I need to be the shit that I think and the shit that I say needs to be relevant. Yeah. Because it lets everyone know that I fucking got something here. I'm relevant.
That celebrity reflex seems to be very strong, you know, and just even if it's subtle, kind of, I want to be heard, have other people, you know, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. The collapse of myself, it's not for everybody.
I was talking to Dave tonight about that. What was it, probably 7 or 8 years ago now, we bought that house.
Uh-huh.
And I had this Pollyanna idea that I'm, you know, be on that porch. You know, I was heavy into Byron Katie at the time. I found the way. All I had to do was, you know, ride it out, do enough of the work, and I was on my way to heaven.
Yeah.
And I was positive it was going to be just this perfect idyllic setting for this and happily ever after.
Yeah.
And what happened is shit hit the fan.
Uh-huh.
And
as it can often do in idyllic settings.
Everything I didn't want to deal with ended up in my face.
Oh, God.
Fucking huge.
Ah. You rolled snake eyes.
Yeah. The idyllic thing is very interesting. It's like, that's what my mind seems to be doing most of the time. Trying to set things, like, it's a control, bizarre control drama, you know? Like, if things just, if I'm going to make everything perfect, and this is how I'm going to do it, and, you know, just, I have ideas about how that will look, and then everything's going to be great.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Forever and ever. Amen. It's like, no, that's not how this works.
It can. From time to time, I guess it can. I mean, Jim Carrey feels that way.
I mean, I don't know, right? I mean, no, actually, yeah.
Just that insistence that it all be perfect and that anything less than that shouldn't be happening. I mean, that's hell. That's totally hell.
Everything's hell. Yeah. If there's the slightest dependency interest in how this is, or how we imagine it or need it to be, you're fucked. Are you anything? Are you anything at all? If you can find something that you are, you're in trouble. Byron Katie can't pull you out of that one. Mind is completely set free when you are nothing at all. There's no story, there's nothing to defend. You're not micro or macro managing anything. You're not trying to steer circumstances or events or other people to your way of thinking, to your need. You're not supplicating God to be noticed in the way that you want to be noticed. even omniscience, omnipotence, and omnipresence are beneath you. You don't have an opinion about self-realization, and there's not much to talk with Rick Archer about.
Sounds like the mouse is getting some water.
I don't know, still home there. He's fast in.
There's time for questions.
So what happens if you're just like hanging out, enjoying the moment? Like there's just some like underlying like desire that the future stays the same and things don't change.
Sure, it's always possible. this is principally hallucinating. Or you could, if you wanted to be, you know, absolute about it, you could say it's only hallucinating. It's all it can do is hallucinate. So the, let's say, realization then is the revelation, call it acceptance, which is not quite accurate, that all this can do is hallucinate. So then that, you know, that sense of urgency of finding something relevant, useful, meaningful, valuable to me can only appear in the, right, the fog, the mist of hallucination. So the interest, therefore, in any kind of success, not just worldly success, even existential success, is given up.
What I was getting at was, like, if you, like, get to the end goal, it's like disappointing a lot of times. It's like the fun is like you know, getting there, like busy doing all this stuff. But then, like,
yeah,
that just sort of seems automatic because at the time you only ever want the goal.
Yes.
And like once you get there, like, well, what do I do now?
Yeah.
But that's, so I guess, from just like a sort of like practical worldly sense, like,
uh-huh,
sort of paying attention to like the getting there and thinking like, oh, like I'm enjoying myself.
Yeah.
Is, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's not really like any sort of release, I guess. But it, no, does seem to be more enjoyable than being like an unaware crackhead.
From a you know, the a yogic point of view.
An unaware crackhead.
Yeah. From the yogic point of view, and yoga is referred to as, right, engagement with the streaming field of sensuality and mind. So one is engaged with, oh, whatever this is or isn't. And then there's a refinement, an organic refinement that occurs where the engagement has us moving about, you know, willy-nilly to micromanage circumstances and events to derive more pleasure, success, security, good feelings, you know, Byron Katie's success on the deck. Yeah, you know, the unperturbed life, right?
That was what I was figuring the
perturbation-free existence.
Actually, it was just like unbelievable bliss. Like, just keep going up, 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 up.
All right. Unbelievable bliss works. Now, if there's a collapse in that, then, yeah, you are asked, invited, or more likely forced to contend with whatever the fuck this is. You know, good days, bad days, enlightened days, non-enlightened days, right? Joy derived from the cultivation, from the pursuit, from the, you know, so-called reinforcement. Yeah,
like
absolutely.
That's the condition of everything. Like,
yes. Yeah. Yeah. Is there an end game? Nope. The collapse of narrative could also imply the collapse of the pursuer and the pursuit and whatever place on the spectrum of success you might think you are. They're all gone. The pursuer's gone, the pursuit's gone, the spectrum is gone, the present condition, the prior condition, or the future condition. They're all gone.
So that would just have seemed like a more skillful navigation of like the same, like madness.
Okay, yeah, well, sure. I mean, skillful navigation of madness is what this is.
Well, I would say that like most of the time it's like unskillful navigation. You're just like being like
Yeah.
Really fucking stupid. But
yes, that's right. Idiots
like
are us.
Less stupid, but like maybe like.
Yeah.
Like.
Uh huh.
You're still pretty stupid.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Right. Even in your most finest moments, yeah, you're still pretty stupid. But that's not, you know, personal blame. That's just the way this rolls. Yeah. Maybe Ananda Mahima stopped being stupid. I don't know. Maybe Ramakrishna was no longer stupid, or Nityananda, or, you know, who knows? Famous yogis we have known and read about. You know, maybe Ramana was no longer stupid. I have no idea. I wasn't there. If I was, they would have thrown me out anyway.
For being stupid.
For being stupid. You're stupid. Get out. I knew that. Yeah. Ah, see, it's there's no measure. That's where the giggle is. There's no measure. There's no capacity to measure. There's no measuring tools. Without measuring tools, you can't inhabit this as a creature, as a person. With no measuring tools, you can't inhabit this. And that's the good news. The insistence on inhabiting the ambiguity of experiencing is samsara. You know, but unless you're being supported by others, or independently wealthy through your own entrepreneurial gifts or family estate, you know, work it out. Yeah, so if you can make a living selling angel readings, get to it. Yes, question in that part of the room?
No, I'm just stretching.
I'm just stretching because you're so boring. that's part of the terror or the frustration of it all, is that measurement, the capacity for measurement, arises absolutely spontaneously without hesitation. The magical power of measurement arises impersonally. Not just, you know, transitioning from sleep to waking, but, you know, all throughout the arc.
Yeah, I have like 800 yardsticks like on everything.
Yeah. So it's the collapse, you know, of the magical capacity to measure that renders you completely useless.
Oh, tell the gerbil story.
Oh, boy.
You've been gerbiling again?
Worse than what it sounds like, except not sexual. But.
Oh. But we're still interested.
It is very good.
So I read that email about going to that campfire thing on Friday night or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Bring an offering for the fire. I can take the gerbil. And then I read them and it's like, they want me to like food too? And now $10 too?
Yeah, $10 food and a gerbil.
Oh, when I make that
decision.
Can I drink what's there?
That's what you think they want.
I'll bring a gerbil. Really? Yeah, don't share.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Talk about stupid. I thought it was well thought out.
See you around.
Satanic sickness.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for supporting the Night's Guy Sonda.
That fire, the like shamanic whatever, they said like bring like an offering for the fire, and she was like, oh, I'll bring the gerbil, and then like, and they want food and $10. What the, wait, why would I bring the gerbil? I'm like, yeah, why would you bring the gerbil for the fire? Yeah.
Do you have a pet gerbil?
Yes, of course they have a pet gerbil.
Okay, let's back up a little.
Who's going to roast it on the fire? Hell
yeah. Why do you guys have, yeah, well, I joke with that all the time fire. About Fred.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, Fred,
I could have brought a chicken
roast.
Dog, that's real fucked
up. He's a lot younger than a gerbil. Well, he probably tastes like pig. He's probably tastes like bacon.
Mm. Oh, good.
See, you were just joking. See, that was a serious thought. Like, okay, I'll just bring a gerbil. Got it. Bring some
check.
And $10. This is getting a little out of hand.
Yeah, it's too much.
I know. When I got to the $10, it was like a light bulb. It was like, they want an offering for the fire. Okay, I'll take the gerbil. Now I have to bring it. Food to share with everybody, and now you want $10 from me?
Yeah, that's it. I'm out.
Then it dawned on me. It's like, oh wait a minute, it was offered for the fire.
Yeah, yeah. Well, your first instinct was to sacrifice the gerbil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really sick.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's it. It's a pagan. It was a pagan invitation.
I guess you didn't go to the fire.
The gerbil still lives.
The gerbil lives. Yeah.
I'm going to catch that mouse. That was too funny, though.
Yeah, that's how those people are, dude. They're like special shaman names, and they're little. I'm like, I'm not falling for that shit again.
Picture of her like dancing. I'm like,
oh, they're always like adorable and really well built. You're like, oh, another hot chick. With a sanctuary.
Weird new age chick.
Well, whatever, yeah.
Good story.
You could ask for offerings.
I got right there.
Sounds like a new Night Sky Sangha post. I'll bring the gerbil.
Oh, boy. Chime in with your angel reading.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. I hope you had as much fun as we did. I really do.